This is the MCrit Podcast, where we bring upstairs care downstairs. Hello and welcome to the MCrit Podcast. This is Scott Weingart. This week we're going to be discussing early goal-directed therapy, but in a very different way than we've done before, because there was a game-changing article published in the JAMA. So we'll talk about that. Before we start, just some housekeeping issues. In the next week or so, I'm going to start posting full-length lectures on the MCrit site. They were formerly on another site. Now they're coming to the MCrit podcast site. I'm going to differentiate them in your iTunes listings with a preface that says lecture. So if you see a title and you see lecture, it's probably going to be 40 to 60 minutes, not the normal 20 to 25 minutes these podcasts are. So if you don't want something longer, then just don't download it or don't transfer it over to your iPod. All right. And if you don't like this mixed deal, then let me know. Send me an email. But back to the topic at hand. I don't know how many folks saw this in the JAMA, but there was an article published entitled Lactate Clearance versus Central Venous Oxygen Saturation as Goals of Early Sepsis Therapy. It's by an author named Alan E. Jones. And this article is really phenomenal in its addition to ED sepsis care. Dr. Jones is an MD PhD. He's a director of EM Critical Care Services at the Carolinas Medical Center. He is a hardcore researcher and an adept clinician. He, along with some of the other researchers at the EM ShockNet group, did this really well-wrought article. And what they did is they basically did early goal-directed therapy, just like the Rivers protocol laid out, in two groups. The only difference is one group got the standard SCVO2 continuous monitoring with the Edwards catheter. The second group, instead of getting continuous SCVO2, had lactate clearance as their marker of tissue oxygenation. So what that means is they had an initial lactate, and then after arterial oxygen saturation goals met, they had their CVP goal met because they were still using CVP, just like Rivers protocol. And after they had their MAP goal met, instead of looking at what the SCVO2 was, and just for anyone that doesn't know, hasn't read the Rivers protocol, SCVO2 is central venous oxygen saturation. It's a marker of tissue hypoxia. So instead of having that measured continuously, they sent a repeat lactate. And if the lactate had cleared by 10% of the initial value, that was considered as good as an SCVO2 greater than 70, and they didn't do any further therapy. If the lactate hadn't cleared by 10% or was actually going up, then they transfused if the hemoglobin was less than 10, and if the hemoglobin was greater than 10, they started them on dobutamine. So basically, just like the early goal-directed therapy protocol, except substituting in lactate clearance for SCVO2. And there was no mortality difference. So it would seem in this study of 300 patients, randomized, controlled, that lactate clearance appears to be as good as SCVO2. Now, what does this mean? Well, first, let's hear from the author himself. I got in touch with Dr. Jones. We set up a brief interview. I'm going to play it for you now. After the interview, I'll tell you my thoughts and feelings on what this article could do for care in the ED.
Well, we found that in our local communities, one of the biggest barriers to implementing early goal-directed therapy the way that Rivers described it was the placement of neck lines, and specifically the measurement of SCVO2 via the precept catheter. You know, we also found that in the academic community, that really wasn't being done very frequently. And one of our missions is really to kind of generalize this protocol so that smaller EDs with less capacity, less ability to measure some of these more invasive parameters would be able to perform a type of structured resuscitation to benefit patients. So that's our ultimate goal. And I think this is really the first important step to achieving that goal.
Definitely. Now, how do you feel we could use this protocol to avoid central lines in some of the severely septic patients?
Well, of course, in the paper, we didn't test a completely non-invasive strategy versus an invasive strategy. But I think some of the things that we found could be applicable in certain situations. For example, if you have a patient who either has a contraindication to a central line or whom you're unable to actually place a central line for whatever reason, I think that this paper gives some pretty good evidence that measuring lactate clearance is a very good way of monitoring tissue perfusion and oxygen delivery. So that's certainly one scenario. And again, although we didn't test this, I believe that patients who don't need a central line for other reasons, specifically those patients who are not in shock but qualify for sepsis resuscitation simply on the basis of an elevated lactate, I think that you can probably avoid a central line altogether and use non-invasive parameters to estimate fluid responsiveness and then follow a lactate clearance for your ultimate estimation of oxygen delivery.
One of the interesting things in the study was only a very small percentage, if I remember correctly, 10%, actually required blood transfusions in dobutamine because either their SCVO2 was low or their lactate didn't clear. Any thoughts on why that number was so low?
Well, that's true. And to be honest with you, that number is pretty much in line with our experience prior to initiating the trial at all three centers. We've published separately our experience with just implementing the Rivers protocol, and I think all of us found that the instance of needing inotropes or packed red cell transfusions is not anywhere near as high as was originally reported by Rivers. So, I guess the answer to the question is we believe that this is a much more accurate assessment of what goes on in academic medical centers around the country. And I just can't explain to you why it was so much different than Rivers. But, you know, one thing I would point out is that our overall mortality rate was 20%, which is, you know, a good bit lower than the early goal-directed therapy group in the original Rivers study. So either we're seeing some drift from the knowledge we've gained since the publication of the original Rivers study, or there was something different about the patient population that entered into the Rivers study as compared to this study.
Gotcha. And this was pretty much in line with what the Australians found as well, right?
I mean, we had essentially the same mortality rate as the Australians.
I know why you folks chose to go straight with the early goal-directed therapy protocol for your study, but in your personal practice, are you transfusing patients who haven't cleared their lactate or do have a low SVO2 if their hemoglobin's between 7 and 10, or are you choosing other therapies first?
I think a lot of it comes down to individual patient. And, you know, if I have a patient that has some other underlying comorbidity that I believe would potentially put them at risk because of a low hemoglobin, then I probably would do transfuse them first. Or, you know, certainly if I have somebody that I think is hemolyzing or bleeding. But, you know, there are some patients that, you know, I think from your clinical assessment, you really can tell that they need a little bit of extra inotrope. So I think in those patients that really seem to have a significant component of left ventricular dysfunction, I would go straight to dobutamine. And, you know, a lot of times you can tell that by clinical exam.
Absolutely. All right, so that was Alan Jones, the lead author of the JAMA article. In addition to being a great researcher and a great clinician, just a really nice guy. And let's talk about what he mentioned, and let's talk about what this article actually means to us in the ED. What this allows you to do is manage a severe sepsis patient without a central line. Now, who does this apply to? Well, it doesn't apply to the patient whose blood pressure is 40 over 20 because they're going to get pressors and they're going to need a central line anyway. So that's not the patient. And you know what? Those aren't the patients that most people get upset about placing a central line in. The patient this makes sense in is that 45-year-old with maybe a Staph aureus pneumonia, and they're talking to you, they're smiling, but their lactate is 5.2. And that's the group when I tell the clinicians involved that I think they might want to consider placing a central line, they look at me like I'm friggin' crazy because they have a perfectly conscious patient sitting there with a good blood pressure and you can't convince them to place a central line. And if I'm there, they had a central line placed. And if I wasn't there, when I look back on the records, very rarely would that therapy be administered. So they weren't getting early goal-directed therapy. They were just kind of getting 2 liters of fluid, some antibiotics, and admitted. And at least in River's protocol, those guys had the most benefit from early goal-directed therapy, the most marked reduction in bad outcome, because you were catching them so early. But that being said, people did not want to stick a central line in these patients. I got to tell you, I wasn't all that pleased with the concept either. But that's the best we had. Now we have something better. So here's the deal. We just go through the same early goal-directed therapy steps. We look at their oxygen saturation. Chances are if the guy's happy, smiling in bed, if you have him on some oxygen supplementation, his arterial saturation is just fine. So we get past that. All right, now we get to the CVP step, and we don't have a central line. In Dr. Jones' study, they had the central line, but since we're extrapolating it to not using the central lines, we're not going to have a CVP, which is good because CVP is kind of a crappy measure, as we've discovered. So what do we do instead? Well, when I was speaking to Dr. Jones, he used his clinical assessment. He sees the patient's response to fluid, and that's good. But if you have the ultrasound machines in your department, you have something better. And my something better in these patients who are cooperative, who you can move around in bed, is assessment of the IVC for both size and respiratory collapse. And all you're going to do is you're going to lie them flat. You're going to slap the probe longitudinal with a marker facing their head. You're going to slide 1 to 2 centimeters off the midline, so you're over their IVC. And you're going to see it in longitudinal. You locate the hepatic veins. And just a few centimeters towards the feet from those hepatic veins, you're going to see both the size of the IVC and whether or not it collapses. And if it's less than 1.5 centimeters, that's small. Even more importantly, it's the dynamic response to breathing. You tell the patient to take a breath in. If the IVC collapses more than 50%, the patient needs fluid. So they already got their 2 liters up front. Now you give them another liter. You reassess the IVC. You give them another liter. You reassess the IVC. You get to the point where the IVC is at least greater than 1.5 centimeters, and there's very little collapse with respiration. Certainly less than 50% collapse. And preferably, I think for these patients, you want to see maybe 10, 20% collapse at most. When you get there, you have them fluid loading, and that's it. All right, you move on to your MAP goals. The MAP's going to be greater than 65. That's how we put these patients in this strategy of non-invasive early goal-directed therapy to begin with. If the MAP's less than 65 after fluid loading, switch them out to the invasive strategy, put the central line in, and give them some pressors. All right, now, so we've optimized our arterial sat, we've optimized our fluid loading, we've optimized our MAP. Now we move on to the lactate clearance. Now, to get in the protocol, they had a lactate that was high, that 5.2. So you send a repeat lactate now, and it's got to clear by at least 10%. So it's got to come down by at least 0.52. If it hasn't, then you can consider transfusion. And these patients, to my mind, are young if they're going to be in this non-invasive arm, because old patients generally are hypotensive. They don't have the same adrenergic system. They're not capable of maintaining their blood pressure. I don't see many old people going in this non-central line group. And in my mind, it's the old people who I'm going to transfuse in that 7 to 10 range. I think they need probably a higher hemoglobin. Can you transfuse a young patient? Sure. And if their hemoglobin is less than 7, obviously you will. After all that fluid loading, it might be. But in that 7 to 10 range, what I like to do at this point, if the lactate hasn't cleared, is put on the ultrasound probe on their heart and see. And if that heart's not beating very well, because of sepsis-induced cardiomyopathy, then I'm going to put the dobutamine on first before the blood. And then we'll send the lactate again in about an hour, and we'll see. You're going to be titrating that dobutamine to echocardiographic response, to getting their skin feeling nice and warm. You're going to keep the tachycardia down, though in a young patient, you could take it up a little higher than you would in an older patient. 110, it's fine by me. And you just keep repeating the lactate until you see the clearance. Non-invasive early goal-directed therapy. That's amazing stuff. Now, just a few provisos to that. What I've found, and I haven't seen great published literature on this, but there's a lot of patients where just a modicum of norepinephrine, we're talking low doses here, 2-3 micrograms per minute, does pretty amazing stuff that really has nothing to do with the arterial map. What I found is these low-dose vasopressors have a tendency to vasoconstrict the venous side as their first action. This is reported in norepinephrine's pharmacology, that it's a venoconstrictor first. Any of the alpha agents do this, phenylephrine too. And what that means is you're getting all those preload benefits by constricting the patient's vasodilated venous side without having to give as much fluid. So this isn't the bad situation where you're giving norepi, it's making the arterial map look better, even though the patient's getting no perfusion. This is a situation where the patient's actually using their own fluid and just sending it to their heart instead of pooling in that enormous venous space. So as patients get older in age, I don't think it's a bad thing to have a small dose of vasopressors going. So this is another reason why I think this non-invasive strategy is really for young patients. And you're kind of losing out because you're going to really try hard not to put them on vasopressors because then you have to put the central line in. And so you have to balance that. You have to have a low threshold to switch over to that invasive group. Now, the other question is, can we run dobutamine through a peripheral line? I think the answer is probably yes. But if anyone has great literature on that, send it to me and we'll put it up on the site. I have run dobutamine extensively through peripheral lines. I think it's probably okay. It's not a vasopressor. It shouldn't cause constriction. But I'd like to see that in evidentiary form. And the other proviso, the other thing I'm a little scared about is that people are going to take this the wrong way and think, not only do you not have to put a central line in, but you don't have to pay attention to these patients. And I'm scared we're going to go back to the situation where patients are going to get 2-3 liters of fluid and then get thrown in the corner. Now, one of the interesting things about the study was that only 10% of the patients actually needed blood or dobutamine because either their SCVO2 was low or their lactate hadn't cleared, which means in 90% of the patients, just fluid loading and vasopressors were enough. And whether you'd sent a lactate repeat or not, whether you'd looked at the SCVO2 or not, the patients would have done the same in 90% of the patients. That's much lower than Manny Rivers' numbers. It's lower than our numbers at one of my two hospitals. But at least in these three large academic centers, most of the patients did not need those additional therapies. This shouldn't keep you from sending the repeat lactates or monitoring SCVO2. All right, one more thing to think about. If you do place the central line, then this lactate clearance isn't as necessary because you could send intermittent SCVO2s. Here's what I recommend. Send both. Every time you send an SCVO2 from the central line, because if you, like me, are not using the continuous SCVO2, then you're going to be sending intermittent draws. Send both. Send SCVO2 and lactate. And if either one of them doesn't look right, so if the SCVO2 is less than 70 or the lactate hasn't cleared, then I would go further with your therapies. Now you have kind of a safety net not to miss patients. Do the numbers correlate? Well, I spoke to Dr. Jones about that as well. They do have the data to answer that question, and they will in an upcoming study. That's coming out. We have that to look forward to. We'll know if in a majority of their patients, 2/3 of their patients, whether the numbers matched up, whether in patients who the SCVO2 was greater than 70, did the lactate clear as well, and the opposite in patients whose the SCVO2 was less than 70, did the lactate clearance not happen. So that's something to look forward to. All right, I'm going to stop there. We now have a pathway, I think, to non-invasive early goal-directed therapy in those young patients who weren't hypotensive or the hypotension resolved, but they have a high lactate. And this is amazing stuff. Hopefully this will expand therapy to centers that were a little leery of placing central lines in these patients who otherwise looked well. And now I'm going to make a plea. If you like the podcast, if you think we're doing good stuff here, please go to iTunes and put in a 5-star review. Write a few comments there as well. If you don't think we're doing a 5-star job, then send me an email. I'd rather you send me the email than put that on iTunes. But if you think we're doing a good job, put it up on iTunes. And if you have any comments for how to improve, then send me the email. All right. Thank you so much for listening. That's all for this week.